Yeah, earlier I explained why we the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League, are putting on this event and why we think the shoe is an important struggle. And we're also doing this within the context of a united front of many organizations that are working on this struggle for various reasons. They think that shutting down the shoe is an important thing to be working on. And we're happy to have Barrier Defense Committee here tonight as one of the initiators of the United Front, and also the Maoist Internationalist Movement has been involved in, initiator of the United Front, has been involved on the streets for many years in this struggle. And I'd like to welcome our next speaker, who is going to speak on behalf of NIM.
Thanks. So, in honor of the presidential debates, I want to read to you all some quotes from President Bush. This is a couple months ago. We started doing these events, actually. We've been holding these similar events in different cities across the state shortly after the Abu Ghraib information came out about what was going on in the prisons there, and we said, you know what, we need to seize on this opportunity that people are paying attention to some torture that's going on in prison somewhere, and we need to tell people that that torture is happening here too. And so the idea for this event came out of that United Front, and different groups have held this event in different cities. So thinking back a couple of months, back on May 5th, President Bush told the world that the torture of the Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib isn't typical American behavior. And he said, the soldiers who carried out the torture, quote, don't represent America. He said, quote, this is a free country. We do not tolerate this kind of abuses. Putting aside the grammar, the bad grammar. He also said, quote, what took place in that prison does not represent the America that I know. It represents the America that I know. This is what's happening daily in prisons around the country, and in a country that has the highest imprisonment rate in the world. So what happened in Abu Ghraib represents exactly what this country is about. In fact, two of the first seven soldiers who were caught torturing the Iraqi prisoners, as Ketso mentioned, they worked as U.S. prison guards before going to Iraq. Staff Sergeant Ivan Frederick, he learned how to torture prisoners at Buckingham Correctional Center in Virginia. He worked there for 6 years before going to Iraq. And Charles Grainer, another one of the seven caught torturing the Iraqis, worked at the infamous SCI Green prison. That's where Mumia Abu-Jamal is held. He's the guy who's quoted on the front of the flyer, if you all saw the flyer for this event. In August of 1998, back in 1998, MIM Notes, the publication that the organization I work with puts out, printed a letter from an SCI Green prisoner, so from this prison that Grainer worked at. This is while Grainer was there. The prisoner wrote, quote, as a result of the brutal beatings inflicted upon prisoners back here at the hole in SCI Green by the guards, the warden, Ben Varner, has been terminated from his prestigious and luxurious position. Unfortunately, the same people who removed him from office decided to relocate him to another prison within Pennsylvania. So now he's on the eastern side of the state implementing the same dirty tactics, only now he's been demoted back to deputy superintendent. So here we see the facts of life in American prisons. You do something bad, you get transferred. And if you don't get transferred, you can always go join the army. They're happy to let you practice your torture techniques on the prisoners in, you know, other countries. So those techniques are very transferable. The prisoner actually went on to say something else very interesting. He also wrote, quote, according to the television news, 40 guards are supposed to be fired. They've recovered videotapes of inmates being beaten down while naked. The inmates never did anything to cause these pernicious predators to attack them. So the naked videotape thing, that came from SCI Green. Grainer learned that there, and then he went to Iraq and he did it in Iraq. And everybody here is shocked about this happening in Iraq. But this doesn't get out that, you know, that this goes on in American prisons. This was printed in our newspaper that's distributed in this country in 1998. So maybe if a few more people had been paying attention then, we could have avoided this. This guy could have been fired, all of those guards could have been fired then, but this is normal. This is normal for what goes on in the prisons. So I would say it should be no surprise at all that the Iraqi prisoners were tortured. In fact, we should have expected it. This is what happens in the American prison system. Beatings, long-term isolation, medical neglect, sexual assault, it's all part of a system that doesn't even pretend to offer any kind of rehabilitation or education. And actually, if you all remember, maybe a couple of months ago, there were a number of reports that came out about California prisons. some scandals, some information about cover-ups, especially at Pelican Bay State Prison. It was pretty impressive that it made it into the mainstream press, that there was a lot of reports about cover-ups at the top of the Department of Corrections, cover-ups that were stopping investigators from looking into the brutal prison guards at Pelican Bay State Prison, both basically talking about the wall of silence among the guards and the way that they're keeping information out. The fact is that this brutality has resulted in severe physical and mental injuries to a lot of prisoners. And we also saw, I think it was a month or two ago, a video from the California Youth Authority, the CYA, showing the same thing, showing guards beating up the kids. Just recently, another kid at CYA died. This stuff is happening all the time in California and across the country. And all of this brutality that happens in general population, this is on top of just the ordinary conditions that are in prison in general. And then we add to that control units. We add to that solitary confinement, conditions that have been condemned by the United Nations as torture. So all this is just standard practice in our prisons. And in fact, I think one thing that Ketso said I'd like to highlight, she said this is cruel and unusual punishment, and I wish we could say that. The fact is that we can say that this is cruel punishment, but we can't say this is unusual. This happens all the time. I think that's important. And in fact, if you talk to lawyers about why can't we file lawsuits on this, they say, well, because it doesn't pass the cruel and unusual test. It's cruel, but it's not unusual. So we can't win when we try to shut down things like control units. These torture units are normal. So coming back to President Bush, for him to claim that America doesn't tolerate the kind of abuses that happened at Abu Ghraib, that's just a lie. That's just a public relations lie. The fact is that the criminal justice system in this country was built on a solid foundation of torture. And as I think other speakers have mentioned, it's a system that's used for social control. This might be to extract confessions or information out of people, or just to degrade and break the will of prisoners. But at base, it's a system of social control that uses torture, humiliation, degradation. Those are just its tools. I want to step back for a second and talk for a minute just about the big picture, imprisonment, what we have in this country. There's some really important facts that I think everybody has to have in their head. First of all, this country has the highest imprisonment rate in the world, over 2 million people behind bars. As of December 2002, the latest statistics that they've released officially, the imprisonment rate was 701 per 100,000 people. So that means you get 100,000 people, 701 of them get put in prison. For every 100,000, 701 are locked up. Remember, that's the highest in the world, the highest rate in the world. It's even more frightening, though, if you break it down by race. As of June 2002, for whites, it was 353 per 100,000 people locked up. For Latinos, it was 895 per 100,000 locked up. For blacks, it was 2,470 per 100,000. So that's 2,470 for blacks, 353 for whites. Now, South Africa, under apartheid, internationally condemned as a racist society, right? I mean, everybody said, oh, that was a horrible society, things were very bad, the white people ran the government, the black people were oppressed, they were locked up, they were killed, they were brutalized. In South Africa, under apartheid, they had, in 1993, they had 851 people per 100,000 in prison, 851. In the United States, under George Bush in 2002, black adult men were locked up at a rate of 7,150 per 100,000. So black men in apartheid South Africa, 851. Black men in George Bush America, or Clinton, really, doesn't matter, 7,150 per 100,000. So that has to tell you something about what's going on in our society here within U.S. borders. So for all this locking up of people, statistics show that prisons don't stop crime. I mean, there's absolutely no studies that show anything about prisons doing anything to help crime rate. In fact, we continue to lock people up since the 1970s. Our imprisonment rate has, gone dramatically up year after year, but yet the rate of government-defined crime, and I want to say that clearly, government-defined crime, has stayed very stable. I say government-defined because I would say that the government are the criminals. But even within their own terms, the rate of crime that they define hasn't gone up, hasn't gone down, but they keep locking up more and more people. So there's no association between this imprisonment. So you have to come back to the question that I think other people have raised, which is why do we have the prisons? And again, the answer I would say is social control. Prisons are a tool of social control. They're nothing more. They're not used to keep people safe. That's just rhetoric. That's just hype. I think So I want to say a little bit more about that, what we mean when we say social control. The government, and in this case in America, we call it a bourgeois dictatorship, because it's the people who own the wealth, the resources and the wealth, the bourgeoisie, who have the power and who are making the decisions. So the government is using its tools, including prisons, to maintain that position of power. Prison is just one in a many, an arsenal of tools, including, the army, the military, other things. Prisons is a tool to maintain control. But it turns out locking up all those people isn't enough. It's still not enough. Within the prisons, we have to build control units. We have to build prisons within prisons. And I think Jay, in his introduction, alluded to this. Why do we have to build those control units? Well, it gets at this contradiction between you lock all of these people up, and then these people are put in a situation where, first of all, you see all the brutality and racism going on. You see people locked up who didn't commit crimes. You see censorship. You see, all kinds of torture going on. And you throw in the mix some people who are politically aware, and people start talking and organizing, and that becomes dangerous. So the government is trying to control the population by putting people behind bars, but you put enough people behind bars and they start talking and they start organizing. So now we have control units. And the control units, just a generic name for solitary confinement cells. 6 foot by 8 foot cell. Very small. Imagine 6 feet, arm span. Many of these prisoners can reach from one side of their cell to the other. They can reach right like that. 8 feet, long. 6 foot by 8 foot cell. In your cell 22, 23 and a half hours a day, many times 24 hours a day. They decide, oh, we're not gonna let you out today. The 1 hour let out for recreation is in a small cage, just like a little dog pen. No programs in these units. You don't get educational programs. The medical care is virtually non-existent. No religious programs, no congregate dining, just sitting in this cell, in this tiny cell. And then when people try to send you literature to read, it's censored. We run a free books for prisoners program. Literature we're sending in now to the security housing units is just being sent back, saying that it's dangerous. We're dangerous because we're trying to educate prisoners. So you've got prisoners in these units, and the control units have a lot of different names. Kessler mentioned that, security housing units, administrative segregation, administrative maximum, it's all the same thing under different names. Generally, when we talk about control units, we're talking about something that prisoners are put in with administrative ruling, meaning that they didn't necessarily do something that they can point to, but that the prison said, okay, we've decided to classify you in some way that you need to go into these units. In the case of California, usually they say, oh, we've decided that you're in a gang. And the evidence is can be anything. The evidence can be signing a get well card. The evidence can be talking to someone in the yard. It can be helping someone to file legal papers. It can be having someone's name in an address book, or it can be someone deciding that they're going to snitch on you because that will get them out of these torture units. And they don't have to have any proof that you've done anything. I can just say, hey, you over there, I saw him and he's a gang member. And that counts. I don't even have to know your name. They don't even care. I don't even have to ever have seen you before. They don't care because the guards are happy to use that. They'll keep that information, and then if they decide that they don't like him, they'll say, oh, well, we had someone tell us you're in a gang. We have to put you in a control unit. So these control units are prisons within a prison used to defeat prisoners' revolutionary attitudes and their organizing. It's used to address the problem of prisons being a tool of social control that also foments revolutionary activity. And I want to read you a quote from a previous warden from Marion, Illinois. He was one of the first, the warden of one of the first control unit prisons, one of the first experiments. And he said, quote, "The purpose of the Marion control unit is to control revolutionary attitudes in the prison system and in society at large." So he put it right out there. I mean, he's right. That's what it was about, and that's what it still is. Control units have serious mental and physical health consequences for the prisoners locked up in them. I think we need to not lose sight of that. Fundamentally, they are a form of torture. Here in California, we've got five prisons that have security housing units. It's at Pelican Bay, there's two prisons at Corcoran, the Valley State Prison for Women, and the prison at Tehachapi. Over 3,000 people locked up in these units across the state. As Ketchum mentioned, the locking up in these units is always disproportionate. always disproportionate by nationality. In California, the situation reflects, it reflects the nation, really. 1998 is the most recent statistics I have available, so the fact that she didn't have statistics is no surprise. The prison system doesn't report on this kind of stuff anymore. They don't want to. It makes it look really bad. But in 1998, the CDC reported that 34% of the population in all prisons was Latino and 31% was Black. 52% of those in the security housing units were Latino. So 34% in general population, 52% in the security housing units, and we have reason to believe that the numbers are significantly higher than that. In addition, of course, you have to look at that number of Blacks in prison, 31% in prison compared to 7% in the population. Very disproportionate. So I want to finish up by reading another quote from a prisoner about the security housing units. This was also printed in a recent issue of our newspaper, which has a couple pages written by prisoners about conditions in the prisons. He's a prisoner in California, and he wrote, "My ethnicity is Hispanic. When I arrived at the Department of Corrections, I was asked by a corrections officer if I was, quote, a Northern Hispanic or a Southern Hispanic. I said, I don't know what you mean. Then I was asked what city I was from. I said, Salinas, California. It was then that I was classified as a Northern Hispanic. Now I'm labeled a Northerner, which is a gang member from the prison street gang Norteños. At that particular point in time, I had no idea what this was or what I was about to experience behind these walls. The Southern Hispanics are classified Sureños, another prison street gang. The DOC currently has the Northern and Southern Hispanics on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week lockdown. We're getting no visits from our families, no exercise outside our cells, and no state-issued hygiene."